Omaha Public Radio presents a special lecture program on Noon Forum. We'll hear a talk by Shannon McClintock Miller, former K-12 district teacher librarian at the Van Meter Community School District in Van Meter, Iowa, and currently an international speaker and consultant who speaks about education, librarianship, technology, and social media. She'll speak on the topic, Be the Change You Want to See in the Library and the World. Her remarks were given as the keynote address at the 2016 Nebraska Library Association Conference. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Friday afternoon, October 21st, 2016, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Nebraska Library Association, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Laura Peach, past president of the Nebraska School Librarians Association.
I have the pleasure, the great pleasure of introducing Shannon Miller, our keynote speaker today. She's just all kinds of things. I first knew her from her librarian's blog. She was also a librarian, school librarian in Van Meter, Iowa. Go Hawkeyes. Okay, I know it's Big Red Country. But I'm a Hawkeye fan. She's now an international speaker and consultant. She works with Cantata Learning and Mackin. And her talk today is on being the change you wish to be. I would say she's a mover, a shaker, a change maker, a revolutionary, an evolutionary. And welcome, Shannon Miller.
Thank you, my friend. Okay. Well, I'm excited to be here today, and I'm going to almost end your day talking about how to be the change that we want to see in the library and the world. And as you heard, my name is Shannon, and I am from Iowa. I grew up in eastern Iowa in Shellsburg on a farm surrounded by cornfields. But my mom, she always instilled this sense of creativity and learning in my sister and my brother and I. And it really served me well as I was little and as I developed a love for art and for books, of course, and for reading, but also for talking. She said, I always like to talk too. And after I graduated from Shellsburg, I went on to school. I went first to Iowa State, and I majored in art. And then I went to the University of Northern Iowa, and I majored in elementary ed. Yeah, I heard it like, woo, yay. And then I stayed home for 13 years with these three kids. And it was when Hagen, my little one, was about one, I got a call from the school that the art job was open. So I applied for the job, and I didn't get it, and I was crushed. And then I applied for the job as a fifth grade teacher, and I didn't get that either. So I'm like, well, I really don't care. I'll just keep staying home with the kids. Well, then the library job came open. And so they contacted me and they said, how about the library job? And I'm like, I don't know anything about libraries. Like, I don't know how to run a library and I don't know anything, how to catalog books. And they said, well, you volunteer all the time and, you know, your kids are at school. It would be a perfect fit. So I went for it and I got the job at Van Meter. And so I went back to school and I got my master's and I started teaching. And Hagen at that time was, like I said, really little. And I just completely embraced this job at Van Meter Community School. And my job was the district teacher librarian. And so our school is K-12 at Van Meter. And there were about 600 kids there. And it's growing all the time. But I don't even think there's over 700 kids there now. But it also is in kind of in central Iowa, also surrounded by cornfields, very similar to where I grew up. And so I was really excited that I was going to get to try new things and do new things and definitely to follow my passions, just like I did when I was on that little farm when I was growing up. And especially to have a voice in transforming learning and changing education and to be the change. And this was something that I was hired to be the librarian, but I was also hired because they knew I would be a leader. And we were going to do at our school not just embrace technology and new tools and new things at our school, but we were all going to transform education at Van Meter. So I want you to think about libraries and education and your role in the library. And I want you to think about these questions. What is all this change about in education and the library? how does learning and teaching change with all these shifts that we're seeing? And what is the change for students with these shifts? I think that's the most important thing to think about. And I want you to ask yourself this. What does this change mean to me? So I'm going to start with my story of change. And you heard a little bit of how I started. And I started teaching there. And when I started, we had hardly any technology. The library, I don't think, had ever been weeded or painted or cleaned or anything. And I just threw myself in there. And I changed the way that we did things and made the library the heart of the school at Van Meter. And we still didn't have very much technology. We had a computer lab, and we had one computer cart on wheels, and some of the computers worked some of the time. But we were working towards developing a technology plan that we were going to put technology into the hands of our kids. And one thing we did about a year into my job is we got connected on Twitter. And when I first got connected, I was probably like a lot of you. I thought, what am I going to get out of Twitter? Like, I would look at it, and all I would see were these stories of, like, famous people saying things or people, like, talking about what they did. And I didn't really understand what I was going to get from it. But I got connected with my administrators and another teacher and myself, and we decided that we were going to look for another school that we were going to connect with, kind of similar to ours. So we found a school in Merton, Wisconsin, and the same thing, administrators, librarian, teacher, and we decided to connect our two schools. And it was going to be really simple the first time. We were just going to read a book together with one of our classes to another class. We were going to use Skype and create something fun with the kids. And so I went to my cousin Krista, and she teaches kindergarten at Van Meter, and she had Hagen actually at the time too, and I said, how would you like to Skype with a class in Merton, Wisconsin? And she looked at me, and she didn't even pause, and she said, I have no desire to do that. Like, I've been teaching for 20 years, and I do not want to do that. And so I would go to her as we were preparing, and I was so patient. I was so excited, and every time she'd shoot me down. But I didn't let that keep me away from her room that day, because on the day that we connected, I showed up, and she didn't have anything ready, and she did not want me there. But I said, it's okay. I have my computer. I'll put it on I found this big Tupperware container. I'll put it on there, gather the kids around, and we'll just use that. And so we Skyped with Merton, Wisconsin, and Van Meter, and we read Where the Wild Things Are. And afterwards, I brought them to the library, and they all made their own little wild self, and we put it together in an ebook. And we had never done a project like this before, especially with our kindergartners. And for them at, you know, 5, 6 years old to see their work like in a published book online was huge for them during that time. But afterwards, when Hagen came up to the library, is when I really understood what this was going to mean to our kids. And Hagen got this book out, and there was a map inside. And he said, Mom, this is where we live in Iowa, and my new classmates, they live here in Wisconsin. And I was like, yes, like, you get it. And I'm like, we have to go down and tell Krista. So we went downstairs, and I said, tell Krista what you just told me. And so he tells her everything, shows her the map, and I look at her, and with tears in her eyes, she's like, okay, I understand what you're trying to do. And she was hooked. And so over the years, like, Krista would come to me, and she was never one that was super comfortable with technology. She always has great ideas. And about 3 years later, she came to me, and they were planning a unit for one of their months in kindergarten. And she said, well, I have one this time. This is a big one. And she said, how about Mercer Mayer? Can we connect with him? And you all know who Mercer Mayer is, Little Critter author. And I was thinking, like, there's no way we're going to connect with Mercer Mayer. But I said, we're going to have to do something really, really special. And so we made a book. The kids all made their own pages, and I put it together in an ebook, and I sent it to Mercer, and I didn't hear anything, and I sent it to his publicist, and I put it on his Facebook, and anything I could do, I would try to get his attention. But I didn't hear anything. And about 4 months later in January, Mercer wrote on my Facebook wall, and he said, I would love to Skype with your kids. I've never been asked before. And so the day before, when Mercer Mayer and I are practicing in my kitchen, bizarre, I was talking to him about this, and it dawned on me that, and I love to tell this story, and he said, you know, nobody, and he still says this to me, nobody ever asked me to Skype. And I'm like, that's because you're Mercer Mayer. Like, we're all afraid to ask you. So do not be afraid to ask people to Skype and to connect with your kids, because having Mercer into the library that day and Skyping and seeing how much it meant to not only my kids, but to look over at the teachers and at Krista and to see how much that connection meant to them, then I knew my purpose there, and I knew that anything I could do, I would do to connect these kids and these teachers to the world. And it means also, like I said, the world to the people that you're connecting with. And Mercer was so great, he put this on his Facebook wall minutes after we Skyped, and you can see how much that means to him as well, and to your kids. So we're first going to look at how our roles are changing. And this is something that we just got back from the School Library Journal Summit, and it's been in my mind like constantly how much the roles are changing. And they've changed so much since I've been a librarian, in the last 10 years, but they're now going to really ramp up and change again. And when we were first starting off just building our curriculum and looking at what we had to do because I was going to be a leader within the school, is we looked at the AASL standards, which are being revamped right now, the ISTE NET standards, which are the student standards that we all follow, and of course the Common Core in Iowa, and the P21 standards too. The ISTE NETs are great because they have all been redone and revamped over the summer. And so you don't have to be a member, but you should be, of ISTE because it applies to all of us. But you can go online and you can look at these standards and see all of the things that we as librarians and teachers need to be not just doing ourselves, but also teaching the other teachers too. We need to be supporting them, and there's standards also for our kids. The AASL standards, like I said, these are going to, they're working on them right now. There's a great committee together. And these are going to come out soon that they're going to be revamped as well. But these need to be something that not just us, again, as the librarian, we need to teach these to our teachers because they need to be aware of these things as well. Because we only see the kids a little bit of the time out of the day. We need to make sure our teachers know these too. And when we built our curriculum, we built it K-12, and the things that it encompassed were tech literacy, information literacy, digital citizenship, and a love of reading, of course. And like I said, this was something that we rolled out, but it wasn't just my curriculum. This was everybody's curriculum. So when Krista was planning her lessons on Mercer Mayer or whoever, she had this curriculum by her as well. When the chemistry teacher was planning, you know, his high school chemistry class, he had these things by him as well because they made sure that all these things were instilled in each one of those classes too. And so that became really important. And when I first got hired, a lot of people asked, like, well, what was your schedule like? Well, when I first was hired, I had the kids for 30 minutes, and that included checkout, every week. And so if we had a snow day or we had a PD day, I might not see kids for 2 weeks if we didn't have them on a certain day. Well, I pushed and pushed and pushed to have that change, and I soon had them for 65 minutes every 4 days on a 4-day rotation. And I also, when I first got hired, I'm sure a lot of you do this too, you were just like a star or a check mark on their report card. So the kids really don't care sometimes that they're there and the work they're doing. Well, when we went standards-based, I wanted to be part of also those standards that all of us were assessing the kids on. And so I was part of the grading system for that. And so every single standard that was in that curriculum that I just showed, I assessed every one of our kids on that K-12 throughout the year. Was it a big job? Yes, it was a big job. But I mattered, and they needed me. And so that made the difference for me in my job. Something that we all need to be paying attention to are future-ready schools and future-ready librarians. And this is something that at the summit, like I said, that we heard a lot about. And it's things that we'll talk about in the next hour, how it's facilitating professional learning and empowering students as creators, cultivating community partnerships, which I love that because public librarians are here too today. And so we need to look at this because it's not going to be an option for us to not pay attention to these things, especially because now we have the Every Student Succeeds Act here. And this is something that was passed last December, and it's the first piece of federal education legislation in over 50 years to provide revenue for school libraries to enhance services and resources. That's huge. And we're part of that. And we're part of that not just in a little piece, but all throughout the ESSA. And so you need to take a look at this too, because these things go hand in hand when we're working not just in our schools, but in our public libraries as well. And since there's lots of public libraries here, I pulled out just a couple pieces to show where you fit too. And the community partnerships and the family engagement, that's part of this that was passed last December. And so we all need to take a look at this and make sure that we know what we're doing and to do these things as well. I asked Paula, since she wasn't here, because one thing that AASL is doing is providing PD in every state. And they're working with someone from the AASL, from each AASL and the Department of Ed, to bring these workshops to your state. So you guys have yours on November 11th. And she told me today, I wrote her to see, and she said that there's a group that has been invited from each unit, and also your board is going. And then they will make sure that all of you have this information. But it's specific to the state. It's required by the state, but it's specific to your state. And so this work by you and this committee is very, very important as well. We also have to be experts and leaders for digital citizenship. And all of our kids, of course, are digital citizens because it's the world that we live in, as and we are as well. And that was a really important part of our curriculum. It started in kindergarten and it went all the way through 12th grade. And once again, it wasn't just my responsibility. It was every teacher, every person in that building, and the parents at home. We wanted to make sure that everybody was on the same page when it came to our kids and that digital citizenship education and support that they got. And so that became really important to us, especially as we started putting technology into their hands. And our kids in the summertime with their parents, they would sign a form that we made sure that they knew everything that they were going to be using, digital tools, the technology, apps. They could have their own device now. They could use their own device at school. And this form took care of that. And then when we went back in the fall, the parents had to come with the kids to school. They had to sign the form before they got their laptop, because we were a one-to-one district then, about probably 4 years, 3 years into my job. And we made sure that it was the parents' responsibility as well as the students' responsibility. And this is how we really got a lot of buy-in from our parents, because they were part of the process as well with all of us teachers and the administrators and leaders in our building. We also, when we first started this, it was so long ago that there really wasn't anything available. And so we wrote a lot of our own curriculum for this. Well, now we're lucky because there's all these places that we can go, and they've done it for us. And so there's no excuse for any of us to say, like, I don't know what to teach my kids when it comes to digital citizenship. Go on Common Sense Education, Common Sense Media. Everything on there is free. I also had the chance, when we didn't have any curriculum, Rosen Publishing came to my school, and they stayed with me for a whole week and saw what we did in our school. And I said at that time, I'm like, well, there's things for like our older kids and our middle school kids, but there's nothing for our little ones. And so I wrote a set of books with them, and therefore, like pre-K to probably second grade, very, very simple. Like, why don't you share your password and why don't you share your address? And these, I think, are also a must for our schools. I know that the AEA, we have these in Iowa, every school does, and they're great because it's a great resource, not just for us at school, but at home too. And there's more things like this coming out as well. I saw some at the summit last week, too, some more from Rosen and one from Lerner, I think. And so there's different things out there. The next thing is to be a connector and a teacher. And being a teacher was definitely probably the favorite part of my job. And I loved also being a connector. And being connected myself, as you've heard even just a few stories, was really important to me because I wanted to take our library outside of the walls and connect our kids to the world. And so just a few stories, just to give you guys some ideas for connecting too. One of my favorite is Zach. He was in sixth grade, and this little boy would come all the time to the library, and he would make all these origami creatures. Well, he loved Origami Yoda. And so he would say to me, like, can you please send these to Tom Engelberger? And he would bring them down, like, every day. And I had a huge stack. Please send them. I have to connect with him. And so I would send them, and I talked to Tom maybe, like, on email once. Well, then I met Tom at a conference. And we became friends, and he became a friend of the schools. And he loves to Skype with kids. Has anybody Skyped with Tom before? Okay, you guys have to ask him, because you just go on his website, you fill it out, it's all free. He's married to Cece Bell, who wrote El Defo, and so they love to even Skype together. And he is amazing because he doesn't just Skype with them. He, like, teaches them, and he connects with the kids, and he gets them excited about reading in his books. And so reach out to Tom. This is a great one. Jonathan Mayberry, who wrote the Rotten Ruin series. And this is one of the favorite books of my kids who really like gory YA fiction. And one day they came to me and they said, we would love to try to Skype with him for our young adult class. Well, they Skyped, and he wrote me back right away, and he said, yes, I would love to, not even knowing that he was a professor in young adult writing. And so he became one of their teachers all throughout the year. And they wrote, they edited, they shared, and it was amazing. And Jonathan became another teacher in our school to our kids just by that connection. And one of my favorite ones is I had a big group of kids, too, that hadn't really like convinced them yet that this was going to be a great thing. And they would come to the library sometimes and hang out, and I couldn't get them really to be in the library either. And this group of boys, they came and they said, well, we bet you can't connect with the creator of Halo. And I'm like, I don't even really know what Halo is, but I could like send out a tweet or something and we could try. And so I sent out a tweet, and within minutes, Alan Murray, the creator of Halo, wrote me back and said, have your kids bring their game tomorrow to the library and we'll play. Now, what do you think that did? When I said that, over the speaker at school, I got all those kids and they stayed and they came back and I hooked them. And that's all it took, was just listening to them and making that connection for them. And he also became a friend of ours too. And I used to think, like all these connections, I used to think that we didn't have anything to offer in Van Meter, Iowa. Like, we live in the middle of cornfields. You guys get it, right? And so then I thought, I was planning a lesson with my friend John Shu. And John was the librarian in a suburb in Illinois. And John's kids, like, they just hadn't been to farms. A lot of them maybe hadn't even been out of their area. And then he had kids that maybe, you know, even didn't speak a language that he spoke in his school. And he said, but one thing we could do when we Skype, and we were celebrating Happy Pig Day by Mo Williams, we were going to make cookies, we were going to Skype and read the book. But John said, you know, you live in Iowa. You could probably find a pig to bring to the library. So I found a pig to bring to the library. And a family in Van Meter, they have a pet pig named Bacon. And so Bacon came to the library that day. And my kids have seen Bacon before, so they really could care less that Bacon's even in the library. But John's kids are screaming on the computer because they couldn't believe we had a pig in the library. So I started to think of all the things that we had to offer in Van Meter, Iowa, all the things my kids could share, that families could share, things that my own family could share. My brother and my dad farm. We had a horse at our house. And one day we had a day off, and so my son and his friend Ben, we Skyped from our horse pasture. And we Skyped with my friend Art, who is in L.A. And Art's kids live in very poor conditions. A lot of them have only been to school and their house, and that's it. He teaches kindergarten. And afterwards, he wrote me, and he said, wow, what a special experience. Our kids haven't seen much, and their world is so small. This opens it up for them. I love this. Now think about what that meant, not only to those kids, but to me and to my kids. And I started thinking about these things, like all the things that we have to offer the world. We don't have to just be a librarian or just a student or just an educator where we're at. We can also offer things to the world as well. And when I Skyped, a lot of you probably wonder, like, well, did she have a big fancy setup, or did she, like, have the perfect library? I've never used a smart board. I've never used an external camera. I had my laptop. I bought a set of speakers, like, at Walgreens for $10. And so the things that I did didn't require a big fancy setup to make these things happen. And a lot of times what I would do is I would have my laptop with me. And it was great because it would give me the chance to go around and just be really flexible. And so when I was walking by the art room one day, the art teacher said, Shannon, come in here. The kids have made such a great project, and we want to see if we can share it with somebody online. Well, I sent out a tweet, and another class wrote me right back. And within minutes, I was able to show this other class we met on Twitter this art project that the kids made. And that kind of stuff happened all the time at Van Meter because of that flexibility and just being open-minded about it. The next thing is to be a collaborator. And I was collaborating constantly. I was a member of the community at Van Meter, and so that was something when I first started that I didn't know how hard it was going to be to transition into the job of being their librarian, but I did everything I could. Emails, letters, wine at my house on Friday night, coffee on Saturday morning with my superintendent at Starbucks, anything I could do to make those connections with the teachers and with the kids, I would do. One thing that I did that was so simple and it was like a huge aha for me is I made a Google Doc. And I did this because we saw a lot of our teachers weren't collaborating like we wanted them to. And so I made a Google Doc, I made a form, and every teacher had to fill it out. They had to fill out what they were doing. They had to fill out the technology, the standards, everything in the beginning. It was a pain in the beginning because they had to fill out everything. And it wasn't from me, it was from my administrators and me that they had to do this. And they didn't have a choice anymore on collaboration with me or with the other related arts teachers. But this, what it did was it drove collaboration. It drove the things that we were doing because we made sure that I was collaborating with them. We made sure that they were collaborating with each other. And it was all public. And so you didn't want to be the row who didn't have anything because that was going to show up. This was public to the teachers, public to the parents, public to the students, so anybody could see this collaboration that was happening. Remember, too, all of the collaboration that our kids do with their parents. They go home and they collaborate and they tell their parents these things. And our parents, to our defense, you know, we haven't been in school now for, I haven't been in school, college for like, or high school for 25 years or more. And so the things that Hagen comes home and tells me, this is collaboration that's happening. This is what gets buy-in from your parents and educates them too. Meriden, who you're going to hear a little bit about at the end, at the time she was 9, and she was in the ISTE journal. And she was because she blogs and she tweets at Meriden's Little Voice. And they were interviewed, her and her mom, for this. And this is a 9-year-old in the ISTE journal about what she did. And it was so great because her mom talked about this, how all these things that they're learning at home come from this 9-year-old, but she's been empowered at school to come home and share too. And also the public library. Think about all the collaboration that us as schools do with our public librarians and all the chances that we have to collaborate. This was our public library, and my school library was really small. Our public library was like, it was basically like a little shed. And it was great, but it was another heart of our community. But these are the things that happened, and this was the zoo visited during summer reading. But we collaborated all throughout the year, and this became a really important piece of our library program for both of our library programs. And look around you in the room. All these people that you have, that you've been with for the last 2 days, those are collaborations that you can make. And so when I would go somewhere, you know, I was the only librarian in our whole district. I would find collaborations everywhere I went. If it was at a technology conference or a library conference, if it was at a conference for, you know, something that had to do with education, I was looking for them all the time. So look for those collaborations too. The next thing is to be a technology integration specialist. And once again, when we integrated technology, we looked at those things in the ISTE and AASL standards and also the Common Core to see where they fit into our curriculum, but also to see where they fit into that collaboration. Where did they fit into first grade? What should our second graders be doing? What should our, you know, 12th graders know when they leave our school? And so that was something that was part of my, big part of my job, was that technology integration. And we put everything, you know, you used to make pathfinders, and they would be pathfinders on paper. And I remember being like in school, undergrad, and making pathfinders for my elementary ed classes. Well, now all of that can be online. And so I would use Google Docs, and I would use tools like S'more, anything I could to get these things online, because I wanted not only my teachers to know what we were integrating, but I wanted my kids to know my job in tech integration. And so like this S'more, when our first graders were doing their safety project, I wanted to make sure that they had not only the tools, but the databases and the ebooks and terms that they needed to know if they were going to search and how to search. I wanted everything in one place, and that was a big part of my job as the tech integration specialist. And that goes hand in hand with just being a matchmaker for these digital tools. The digital tools, it's overwhelming sometimes, isn't it? All the different things that we learn about. And this is overwhelming for us, but it's also overwhelming for our teachers and for our kids and our parents too. So these digital tools, they became part of our collection. And not only did we have our resources in the library and online, but I also had to make sure that the digital tools that they were using and they had access to were going to be educational and safe and robust for them to use. The next thing is a social media guru. Do you guys feel like a social media guru ever? I didn't either when I first started. And sometimes I still find people that are like so much farther ahead than what they do with their kids with social media. But I knew that not just being connected on Twitter for me was going to mean something for the library, but I also had to get the library on Twitter. And so we started a Twitter for our library, and we called everything the Van Meter Library Voice. And so the Twitter, our Facebook, anything that we had that was on social media was all branded the same. And I put anything out there I could on Twitter. I would share work that they were doing. I would share new books that we got. I would share if we had a special Skype visitor. Anything I could put out there on Twitter, I did throughout the day. And I didn't just have myself doing the tweeting. I had it up on my circulation computer in the library, and I taught my kids as a class how to tweet. And so the kids, we had different kids in classrooms too, doing the tweeting for us and sharing this voice from the library in the classrooms. And that made a big difference for what they were seeing and what they were doing. And it was also a huge teachable moment for our kids. And so when we would not be using the screen, I would just keep my Twitter up in the library, and the kids could see it. They could see that conversation, and they knew that we had this global voice. And so on the day that we were learning about iMovie, this was something that was new to me, so I didn't know how to answer the questions that they had. So we asked on Twitter. And within seconds, we got like all these responses back that taught the kids and I how to use iMovie. And so use that as a teaching tool and use that as a communication outside of the four walls, because it does make a difference for your kids and you. And all of these different things are social medias. If you're blogging, if you're using YouTube, if you're using Facebook, they're all ways to get connected. And it was overwhelming at times to be connected on various spots. But reality is our community, they're in different spots. Not every parent's on Twitter. Not every parent is on Facebook. Not every teacher uses Digo or Symbaloo. You have to meet your community where they're at in these different places. One of the easiest ones for me was Instagram. And I had an Instagram for myself, but then one of my students, my elementary kids, said one day, we should start an Instagram for the library. So we started one, and I kept it up on an iPad in the library. Just logged in, I put it on a tripod, and the kids could come and they could get it and they could post pictures from the library. And you look at these and you can tell that. And these are pictures of their, through their eyes, of the things that are important to them and the things that they were doing and learning and saying. And so this was something that really meant a lot to my kids. And they would take pictures of, if we were Skyping with a special author, we've done a really cool art project, they would just take over and then put that on Instagram. And like I said, just to teach them how to be using these different social media is really, really important too. The next thing is to encourage and support mobile devices, learning and teaching, and not just technology that we use like computers, but the kids were using their own devices and devices at school. So the way that we were consuming information was changing. We used a lot of, well, in this one, I'll go back. We used a lot of things when we were, a lot of different tools like QR codes or virtual reality eventually. And it was fun because you could see the kids, you know, not just being engaged in what they were doing, but being mobile and being able to move around and being able to access things at home and in other places. And this is an activity that we did, and it was for Global Read Aloud, which I would highly suggest getting involved in. And Global Read Aloud is just a 6-week time period that you celebrate reading by reading a book with kids for 6 weeks, and they have four different levels that you can participate in. And we did one with our sixth graders, and we read the book together every week, Out of My Mind by Sharon Draper, but we just didn't read it in our library. We used our mobile devices, we used the app Edmodo, and we connected with another school in New Hampshire. So as we were reading, the kids were using that also as a back channel. Well, think about when you read to a child, they love it, and of course we love it. It's one of my favorite things to do. But for them to take their learning one more step, being connected, having that conversation as they're going, it meant so much more to them than if we just read this book by themselves. And so you just participated in Global Read Aloud, didn't you? Yeah, it's awesome. And so I would really suggest getting involved in that. We have to advocate for teacher librarians, educators, education, and especially for our kids. Doesn't matter what we do in education or working with people in schools and in libraries. And the biggest place that I have found that I have been an advocate and made connections is Twitter. And that's what really changed my life. Because when I started, I remember I just really made changes in my community. As soon as I got connected on Twitter, I started to see the big picture of how we need to be connected in the ALA, in AASL, in different organizations that we can make a difference in our libraries and also in education in general. One of the best things is TL Virtual Cafe. And TL Virtual Cafe is a free event that they have every month. And the last few years, we've actually had three different things each month. Well, we decided that we needed to revamp it. And so in January, it's going to roll out again, totally revamped. And we're going to have it on the first Monday of each month again. But you can go to this site and you can go to all the archives. So say that you're curious after you leave here and you're curious about Twitter and libraries or makerspaces. You can go and you can find all these great webinars that people from all over the country have done. And it's all free. Totally free PD. You can be at home in your pajamas even if you want. And it's awesome because you're learning with this great group of librarians. Also, there's a lot of different movements that are going on. TYSL from Mackin is one that started last year that is completely free to get involved in, but it's going to make a huge difference by making these connections because we're not only sharing this information, but we're celebrating and we're supporting libraries. And these are just some of the advocates that are involved. And it's not just librarians, it's administrators and people from the Department of Ed and people from ALA. And so check that out because you can go there and get involved and also get all these great resources. And also I've been seeing around your conference lots of different things for Libraries Transform. And this is something that the American Library Association, that they did for their public awareness campaign. And I love the things on their site. And once again, just by getting involved in this, you're advocating for libraries, you're making a difference in your school for your kids and in your public spaces too by getting involved in these initiatives. And don't just think about library organizations. Think about getting involved in ISTE. ISTE is one of the best things that I ever did as an educator. And they have a conference each year. They have things in each state that are great. You guys have a great organization in Nebraska. But look at the things that are on there for librarians and all of the professional development and ways that you can really use these different tools. And another thing I did is I got involved in different organizations, even for like administrators. I was a member of our administrative council in Iowa because I wanted to get involved with my administrators in my school and also those of the states too. And our kids got involved and our kids' voice and when it came to really celebrating what libraries were about in Iowa was huge. One year we were invited by the governor to come speak at the bullying conference, the anti-bullying conference. And it wasn't to listen to me, it was to listen to our kids. And they also got invited to the Iowa School Board Association conference to speak in front of 5,000 school board members. But that made a difference for those school members that day and made a difference in the schools. So get involved in these organizations too. The next thing is how our spaces are changing. And when I first started, like I said, my space was old and it was somewhere that the kids did not want to be. And I changed it into, even though it was two small spaces, into someplace that was the heart of the school with the resources that we had. We soon, about probably 4 years into my job, we started talking about renovating Van Meter. And Van Meter's never had a new school. It's over 100 years old. It's been built onto a lot of times. But recently, it was the first renovation that took place. This article that was in the School Library Journal is a great one because it talks from the administrator's point of view, and it's a lot about my superintendent and his ambitions of putting the library in the center of the school at Van Meter and how we were going to change it. And not just making a new space, and it still wasn't going to be really huge, but thinking about all the ways that we use our spaces. And Johnny, the architect, he was a parent too. He used to come to the school, and he would say, I just saw those kids go into the closet with, like, green paper. I don't know what they're doing, but you might want to go check on them. I'm like, oh, they're okay. They just need, like, a quiet spot. Or they would, like, shut my office door, and he'd be like, there are kids in your office. And I'm like, well, there's no place for them to be. Like, it's fine. Like, they're probably recording something. And so it was really great because he really took a look at how these spaces are changing. And our spaces, even though they were really active, after we got a 3D printer in our library, they changed a lot because we got a 3D printer, we put it into our library space, and I wrote a grant from Donors Choose, and I wrote it because I thought it would be really cool to have a 3D printer. But when we put this printer into our library, it not only changed the voice of one of our students, Luke, it really changed the way that I looked at our library and why our library needed to be different. And before we got the printer, just to give you a little background on Luke, Luke was one of our students who I will never forget in all my years of teaching. And when he would see me in the hallway, he would sing to me. And I was the library girl, and our superintendent was the bald guy. And Luke is autistic, and that was his way of communicating with all of us. Well, when we got the printer, Luke found me in the hallway again. He said, Shannon, I hear we're getting a 3D printer. And he went on and on and on about everything that he knew about the printer. And I'm standing there, like, not only is he, like, talking to me about the printer, but he's an expert in 3D printing. And so when we put this printer into the library and Luke opened it up that day, it turned the library into this even more active space because Luke was inviting kids in and he was inviting teachers in and printing combs and sharks and all kinds of things and teaching our kids how to use this 3D printer. Well, I soon realized after the story with Luke and after seeing how much Luke loved this that all of our kids needed the opportunity to do these things. And so I thought, where are we going to do this in our library, in our school? Well, I looked at the library office, and I went to my associate, and I said, I think that we should get rid of the library office, and we should turn it into our makerspace. And so Diana could have been really sad and upset, but she was really excited too. And we got rid of everything that had been into that office, and we went to our kids, and we said, we want you to create the space. And so we let them plan it. We let them draw pictures. We let them do research. We let them work with the shop teacher to create the furniture that we had to make out of recycled wood because we didn't have a budget for this project. And even though this space was really little and we had no idea in the beginning what we were going to do, the kids took this on themselves, not just to create this space, but to order the materials, to plan the different activities that we were going to do with me and the teachers. And this space made a big difference in our library and within our school. And it was just a 10 by 10 space, and it was something that I really didn't know even in the beginning. Like I said, getting that 3D printer, the difference it was going to make. But this space and really changing things around in our library into a learning commons made a difference for our school and for our kids. And we also put our space on the online. We made digital spaces for our makerspace. We made spaces for them to put into their pocket on their own devices. And so think about how your spaces can be different. They don't just have to be traditional. They don't just have to be in the library. And they can be in the classrooms and outside of the four walls, too. Our collections, too, are changing. And our collection changed a lot as we started putting more and more technology into our building. And I love books. I love reading to kids. That was important to me every time they came. I love, just ask my husband, I have like a huge addiction to picture books. And I did in the library, too. And that was something that sometimes I worried a little bit about as we started putting more devices into the hands of the kids and into our school. But all it did was it just changed the way we did things. we started to catalog everything in Mac and Via, and this was a vehicle that my kids were going to be able to get to their ebooks and their databases and their audiobooks and resources online easier than they ever had before. And before we had this, I was worried because they weren't using the resources that we had. But after we started using Mac and Via, they were connected to the resources that they needed. And I would do things like this read box. And the read box looks like just covers in the book. And yes, it's fun because it says Mac and read box. But when they would scan those covers, I put with augmented reality book talks from the kids. And so when they would come by here, they could scan those with their devices and book talks from their classmates, from the people that they went to in school, would pop up out of the book covers. And so I had to push and do a lot of things that were really creative because our collection was changing. But it was great to see them using things like Mac and Via and Pebble Go and different tools like Tales to Go for audiobooks. This is really fun, and we learned this too at SLJ. This is a fun time of year to see what all the publishers are doing and all the different things that they're doing with books. One of my favorite new ones, and I do work with them, is Cantata Learning. And Cantata Learning has created books that are all based and moved around music. And they're great because there is a CD in the back, but also all the music is online. So all they have to do is scan a QR code, and it takes them to that music online. Well, how many of you, you've never wanted to check out the books before that have the CD in the back? We were the same way because they were maybe going to lose them or scratch them. You don't have to anymore. And this is just one example of what publishers are doing that are really changing the collections for us. Also, we got, when we started to really view things that were in our online catalog more, like how kids were looking at ebooks, I started to also think about our collection. And I would see my own son, he would come in the library and go straight for the football books or straight for the graphic novels, and that was it. But when he went into the ebooks, he would read all kinds of things. And so we decided to ditch the Dewey, and we decided to go category-based and genre-based in our library. And so I was right, thank goodness, and our circulation went up 38% the first month. And not just it went up, but the kids were reading things across the different genres and across the different categories that we had. And it was great to see the difference that that made, but it was because we were really viewing things different in our online catalog too. I also started taking a look at the student work. And the student work, you know, they made these great projects, and then that was it. They would share it with their classmates, share it with their parents, but then it had no place to go. Well, I started to catalog their student work, too, in Destiny. And so when the kids would look up iSpy books, they would also find the iSpy book that they made. Or if it was about Iowa animals or whatever the project was, I started to catalog that creativity that was happening. And so you can do this in Destiny. You can also do it now in Mac and Via, which is great. And so then they can see that student work. And also a lot of free resources became part of our collection. And there are so many free resources out there. There's Epic now that has like 17,000 books that are available. There are Symbaloos that are made up. And so look at the things that can become part of your collection. And I would put these right into my catalog too. And so those became part of it as well. And even though our collection's changing, we all have to instill a love of reading. And we would constantly be doing things with our public and our parents and anything we could just to celebrate reading. And one of our favorite celebrations was World Read Aloud Day. And World Read Aloud Day was awesome because in the beginning, it was a celebration that we just celebrated in our school. And I would read from them from Skype in my library office. And the kids thought it was awesome because it was a way for us to practice Skype. It was a way for them to see me reading to them different, to celebrate reading differently. But over the years, we started connecting even more. And one year, we made 32 connections on Skype and Google Hangout. And that sounds super overwhelming, and it was pretty time-consuming to really plan that week. But it meant the world to the kids because we were celebrating reading differently. Now, the last thing I want to talk about is the voice and how the voice of the library and education is changing. And this is something that I'm so passionate about because our kids are the ones that are really bringing this change. And the first story I have to share is my own son, Hagen. And Hagen, when he was in third grade, he came home and he said, Mom, they're going to ban rainbow loom bracelets. And I'm like, why would happen? And I like love them because the kids would be creating with them in the classroom and in the library and on the bus. And Hagen had just gotten a loom. And so I was really disappointed. And he said, well, we're trading them and we're like throwing them in class and they're really becoming a distraction. And so I said, well, Hags, you're going to have to like do something different or they're going to be taken away. And so him and his classmates the next day, they had a little chat and they came to me and they said, we really want to do a project, and so the bracelets won't be taken away. And we wanted the kids that year, we wanted them to pick their own PBL project. And so they said, this would be a great PBL project. We could get together in groups, and we could research, we could dive into the inquiry model. They even Skyped with places like EasyBib to learn even more about research and citations. And they did a great job of starting a project called Banding Together. And so over the those couple weeks, it was fun because the kids were not only researching and working in their group, they were also creating bracelets. And so we had like hundreds of bracelets in the library, and I thought, well, we have to have a place where to send these to. And so I reached out to one of my friends who saw one of my blog posts on my blog, and Mark was the superintendent in Merton, Wisconsin, that first school that we connected with. And Mark is now a missionary in Africa. And so Mark had written me, and I reached out, and I said, we would love to send these bracelets to you. And he said, that would be great. Like, the kids would love them here. And so I wrote about it on my blog, and the kids were still creating bracelets. And another group, a publishing group in this Together Media in New York, they saw the story. And so they reached out and they said, we have a place in India that we would like you to send the bracelets to. They would love them. And it was an orphanage in Mangalore. And one of the publishers, her aunt, was a nun there. And so we Skyped with them and we learned all about it. And the kids were so passionate about both places to send bracelets to. Well, a couple weeks later, we were getting the bracelets ready. And In This Together Media reached out to us and they said, we would love for you to start a foundation with us. We think that this is going to be just a great project. And they knew that the kids' project was called Banding Together. So they worked with a graphic designer, and they started a Facebook page and a Tumblr, and they were planning to send these bracelets to these two places, but they were also going to start talking about it around the world. And so we would put it on Twitter, and we would put it on Facebook, and Rainbow Loom picked up the project, and they were also sharing about it, and bracelets were coming in from all my kids in the school. Well, also, what do you think happened? They started coming in from all over the world, like millions of bracelets to Van Meter, Iowa. And so we then really had to have a place that we were going to send them. And so I started partnering with some of my friends. My friend Andy Plemons and I, we decided to make charms for them on our 3D printer. We Skyped with Joyce Sidman, who's a poet, and she helped us make these original love poems to put onto our bracelets. And they were all ready to send off. And when we sent them off, Hagen and his friends, they were so excited because they knew the difference that they had made by just sending these bracelets to these other places. But the project went on, and the bracelets kept coming and coming. And so we had to partner with Be a Noble Kid. And Be a Noble Kid is an organization that they have now taken on the Banding Together project. And it's really neat to see the difference in not just sharing their bracelets with each other and these people, but sharing them all over the world and the difference that they can make in this organization. And in January, my husband works for Capstone, and we went to a school that they started in the middle of the jungle in Mexico outside of Cancun. And we brought books, and they brought iPads, and it was so great because they've built like a school and a library at this place in the jungle. And my sister and I, we decided that it'd be cool, and Hagen, to bring bracelets. And so I brought containers of bracelets to Mexico with me too, and that's what I was going to pass out. And so I was passing them out, and this little girl, she was like taking all of them, and she wanted them all, and I could tell she was in control. But what she really wanted was that container that I brought the bracelets in. Well, later on, I saw her, I gave the container to her, and I saw her come back, and she gave me the biggest hug, and her container was filled up with water. Well, she wanted that because she wanted it for a container to take back to her home in the jungle. And so her little sister gave me a hug too. And of course, I'm crying by now. And then to see them run off in the jungle, I couldn't wait to go back to tell Hagen and his friends the difference that his voice made. And I want to end with a story about my friend Ian and Jack. And Ian and Jack, when they were little, they started a conference. They had an idea to start a conference when they were little. But when they were sophomores, they started the Iowa Student Learning Institute. And Ian and Jack had this conference, and I invited two students to it. I invited Meriden, who was completely engaged in her education, and I also invited my friend's daughter, Jackie. And Jackie was the kid we've all had that doesn't get engaged. And during the keynote, I watched Meriden. She was so engaged, and I watched Jackie, and she could have cared less about being there. But afterwards, I saw they were on their device. And I went over and I said, "What are you guys doing?" And she looked up with me with the biggest smile and she said, "Meriden, help me make a blog during the keynote." And she's like, "Nobody ever listened to me before about my Minecraft passion. And nobody had ever paid attention to not only how much she loved it, but to take the time to help her do this." And so we saw this little girl during this day become so engaged and excited because somebody listened to her. And her mom said later, "Thank you so much for inviting us today. I feel like knowing you will change my life and Jackie's too. Thank you for being you." But think about that. I didn't do anything that day. I just invited them to come to that conference. And Lisa said, Meriden's mom later, she said she's with her people. And this was something that always stuck out to me when I went back and I thought about Student Voice. And I thought, that's how we want our kids and our patrons to feel every time they come to the library and every time they go anywhere. We want them to feel like they're with their people. So we as teacher librarians and librarians and people who care about young people, we must change. And we know that even just one thing can make a difference. When I was getting ready for the conference, I put this question out on Twitter and I made a Padlet and I collected responses from people all over Nebraska. And it was great to see these stories, and you'll have to look back at these because they're these great stories of people making differences. And so it's not just me standing up here telling you these stories of a librarian in Iowa. This is happening all around you in Nebraska, too. If it's Breakout Ed, somebody making a photo booth for Spirit Week, a makerspace. I love this, making an iBook and also cataloging it. Having a hashtag Husky Reader, like, how awesome is that to be able to celebrate? My friend Lynn, she told me this story yesterday about one of her students and she couldn't get them connected to read. And now she's always loved cats, but she found the perfect cat book series for her. And this sign at Disney really says it all. And I love when Disney, every time they're building something or they have something new, instead of having like a keep out or danger sign, they have dream builder signs. And when I saw this a few years ago, I thought, this should say it all to us. The way to get started is to quit talking and begin doing. And that's what we have to do when we want change to happen. And so I encourage all of you to be the change that you wish to see in the world. I did it. 1 minute left.
You've been listening to a special lecture program on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Shannon McClintock Miller, former K-12 district teacher librarian at the Van Meter Community School District in Van Meter, Iowa, and currently an international speaker and consultant who speaks about education, librarianship, technology, and social media. She spoke on the topic, "Be the Change You Want to See in the Library and the World." Her remarks were given as the keynote address at the 2016 Nebraska Library Association Conference. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Friday afternoon, October 21st, 2016, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to Paula McClung, president of the Nebraska School Librarians Association, for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 600 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.